The data is undeniable. We are an aging society. What will that mean? And how can we prepare our communities today for tomorrow's aging America? That's the subject for this edition of the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Mia Oberlink and Phil Stafford come to us from the Advantage Initiative, an endeavor aimed at creating elder-friendly communities. Mia, explain the basics of this initiative, what it is, and in some cases, what it is not.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, it is a tool with several different components to it that communities can use to measure their elder friendliness and use that information in order to inform action to improve the community, make it more livable, more elder friendly, and just a better place for everybody to live. Because when you make a community elder friendly, actually everybody benefits.
Well, that's where I was going to. How do you define elder friendly?
Well, we developed a framework that basically defines four different domains, including basic needs, social engagement,
mental and physical health and well-being.
Right. And
this is a team effort, I see.
Yeah, maximizing independence. You'd think by now I would know all of this, right? But so anyway, those are the four domains that we think need to be looked at by communities when they try to determine whether or not they are elder-friendly. And within those domains, we have indicators that can tell communities how well they're doing in each of those areas. Lots of communities around the country use indicators to kind of measure and keep track of how well they're doing in, you know, certain areas that they're interested in. And this is a similar kind of thing.
Now, Phil, is it something like where you're trying to match the needs of individuals or groups with particular services?
No, actually, I would characterize it as a more comprehensive community development approach. Obviously, the survey that we do informs us about specific needs that older adults might have, but we really don't refer to it as a needs assessment because it also assesses the contributions of older people to their community. And the focus is on it does give you a sense of scale about certain issues in the community and helps to, again, broaden the dialogue beyond the needs of individual elders, which are not unimportant, obviously, but to create more of a kind of a collective orientation towards the community as a whole. And so I think it's different in that sense than from other traditional approaches towards the subject.
Now, this is all driven by data, and you developed that survey mm-hmm. instrument. Tell us how you decided on that strategy, Phil, and what you're trying to find necessarily.
Well, the idea of measuring a community, we felt was an important strategy because while individual stories are important and compelling and a useful part of a repertoire, you know, for community activists, having some real data about a particular issue and the scale and scope of that particular issue becomes valuable to government officials who want to be able to provide evidence, you know, that this really is an issue that's been objectively substantiated, and other funding organizations that use the data to set priorities. But the data are also useful in building public awareness around issues. So there are a lot of things that can be done relative to building awareness of the role that older people play in their community, the valuable role they play as caregivers, their participation in social and cultural life, those kinds of things.
Now, Mia, I went mm-hmm. to your website at Advantage Initiative and saw some of the questions that you asked as part of the mm-hmm. survey instrument. And let me share a couple of those with mm-hmm. you, and if you could tell me about how you came about those questions. Does your community help older residents maintain their health, live independently, and lead productive and satisfying lives?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a general question, but what we have are indicators underneath all those kind of general questions that can actually answer that question. I just wanted to add to what Phil said that it was very important for us to go to older people themselves to find out what they think, what they experience, what they feel about their own communities. You know, so much of what goes on in the aging services field, for example, is done based on impressions, you know, and these impressions are formed by the kinds of people that service providers see and so on, but that can really skew your impression of the community as a whole if you're only seeing, for example, you know, the small number of people who have, you know, very intensive needs. And then your image of aging is that, well, everybody is like that, but that's not actually true. So going to older people themselves to hear from their, you know, their own voices, what's going on in the community and how they perceive it, is often really missing from planning and from the things that people do in the community, yeah.
Was that group surprised that someone would actually come to them and ask them what they thought?
Well, you know, many times people are extremely enthusiastic about responding to the survey. We've had actually a very good track record about that because they're interested in the fact that somebody is asking them. You know, maybe no one ever did, really. And they seem to be very open to that idea.
Phil, one of the other questions I saw on your website was, is planning for a growing older population a priority in your community? Does your community have reliable data to inform planning? Is that really a gap that a lot of communities are dealing with as we approach this? Well, we've had it called a lot of things, silver tsunami, the baby mm-hmm. boom generation mm-hmm. retiring, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think the numbers of people who do not see their public officials paying adequate attention to this issue, and not only for their own age group, but for other age groups, is relatively high. I'm forgetting the specifics, but I remember thinking that was probably not where it should be. However, we found that 85% of the respondents had voted in the last election. So they're not politically apathetic. They're very engaged politically, and probably 4 out of 10 had contacted a local representative about an issue, those kinds of things. But I'm not sure that they have the level of confidence that public officials are giving attention to the issues that you know there needs to be. Some fatalism, I think, about that.
So you have these four domains that you were talking about: addressing basic needs, optimizing physical health and well-being, maximizing independence for the frail and disabled, promoting social and civic engagement. How are we doing on each of those?
Well,
or pick your favorite, Mia.
Who's we in that sentence? We haven't done this in Kansas City, so unfortunately I can't tell you how Kansas City is doing about
it. How have other communities responded? What kind of results have you come with the communities mm-hmm. that you have worked with?
It's so mixed, and that's what makes it so fascinating, how different communities can be from one another. One community can do fabulously well on one measure, and the next one will do just abysmally on another measure. It all has to be contextualized in the local climate. What's going on in that community, and how do you use what you know about the community to make interpretations of the data that you get? Sometimes people see in the data is confirmation of the things that they've always believed, but it's the first time it's been quantified for them. And other times there are huge surprises.
Phil, any kind of common denominators around issues like housing, transportation?
Well, transportation is an interesting one because often in Indiana, where we did the survey, about half the population reported they have no access to public transportation. But even in areas, in urban areas where they have report a higher access to public transportation, utilization rates are extremely low. So there's a huge disconnect there mm-hmm. between the way public transportation has been developed and organized and the transportation needs and experiences of older people. So there's really something missing mm-hmm. there. There's a real gap in that the system is not adequately serving them. So I think that's pretty interesting. And transportation is one of those interesting areas that the communities have to address because, first of all, it's a costly area. Some people are overwhelmed by what needs to be done. And it's also an issue, however, that cuts across age lines and requires new kinds of alliances and collaborations to fulfill the needs. Kansas City is working on what they call the Senior Mobility Network or Framework. And I think it's a really wonderful start because it reframes the whole subject of transportation in terms of mobility. And so the issue of walkways, for example, and signage, and bringing services closer to people's homes so they don't have to drive as far, become part of the transportation discourse, if you will, which is really valuable because otherwise we're not going to make much progress.
Any kind of story you can share with us on a community that seems to have been able to use this initiative particularly for their benefit and for the older population within their community?
Oh, I think we have a lot of examples of that. One of the communities that I'm very involved in New York City has done an incredible job of using the data to get the attention of public officials, elected officials in the community, to help this community out. And it's a public housing community. And, although the elected officials were aware that it was there, that community was there, they didn't really understand the magnitude of the issues that older people in that community faced until the data concretized that for them, and they really stepped up to the plate to help that community out, and they've made tremendous progress. And I mentioned the indicators before, and this community decided just to work on three of the indicators. There were other compelling data there, but they decided that these three were the most important for their community. And, they started work on this a long time ago, and it's 2009 now. They've actually been working on it for nearly 9 years. One's work is never done is really the answer, but at least they can measure and point to progress along the way.
So it will not be an easy, quick kind of process at all?
I think that there's a range of things people can do. Sometimes there are what we call easy wins, things that you can do quickly without too much in the way of resources and so on. And you can certainly use that as a building block. Look what we achieved. Now let's go on to the next thing, which might be a little bit more complicated than the first.
Now, Phil, will we as Americans have to be forced to recognize these issues, kind of shocked into recognizing that we need to address these issues sooner rather than later?
Well, I think we have to face it, and I think that actually one of the driving forces is going to be the experience that baby boomers are having providing care and support for very elderly parents and relatives, because that's their first encounter with the system, and sometimes it's not a not the best encounter one might imagine. And they're not doing it out of selfish reasons necessarily, but there is the issue of, when I get to be that point myself, I hope the system is working differently, not that they're not concerned about their elderly parents. So I really think, and there's 77 million of those baby boomers, and so I think it's not necessarily a crisis. It can be a crisis at the individual and family level, certainly, and that would be replicated probably more frequently than what has been the case because of the demographics. So if there is a crisis, that may be, the one that manifests.
Well, Mia Oberling, Phil Stafford of the Advantage Initiative, thanks for joining us and good luck.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank
you.
Okay.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. I'm your host, Morel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.